WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Hey, what is up, beautiful people? It is June 11th, 2015. Hey, happy Thursday, ladies and gents. You are tuned into Current Sports with me, Al Martin. We have another fantastic show for you all. Folks, have you heard the news coming out about Maryland University? They have actually approved a plan to sell beer at sporting events. What do you think about that? Again, we're taking your calls all the way up until 2 p.m., 517-355-9527. I'll also give you my thoughts on Bob Costas disagreeing with ESPN to give the Arthur Ashe Courage Award at the ESPYs to Caitlyn Jenner. Hear why I think that Costas has a pretty good point of view on this one. You don't want to miss that chat. We'll also have Throwback Thursday for you, as well as give you a sneak peek into tonight's Current Sports television episode with guest Mike Ingram of the Lansing Community College men's basketball team. All of that and so much more. But hey, let's start this party like we always do. Here are your Current Sports quick hit headliners again for this June 11th. Hey folks, Michigan State's baseball team enjoyed its biggest output in the 50-year history of the Major League Draft. Man, a program record. Get this. 8 Spartans were selected by the big league teams in the MLB first-year player draft. In 1966, there were 7 picked, 5 in the second modern draft, and 2 were in the now-defunct June secondary phase. Now, on Wednesday, 6 MSU players were selected. Anthony Miskiski, Cam Vokes, Jeff Kinley, Mick Van Bossen, Blaze Salter, and Mark Wiest. On Tuesday, junior outfielder Cam Gitson was taken by the Detroit Tigers in the 5th round, and senior first baseman Ryan Krill went in the 9th round to the New York Yankees. How about that? 8 Spartans selected in this year's MLB first-year player draft. Remarkable stuff. All right, Chris Colan and Miguel Montero hit 3 run blasts as the Cubs knocked out Tigers starter Shane Green early and cruised to victory while tallying a season-high 12 runs. Jake Arrieta allowed a 3-run homer to Yoenis Cespedes, but otherwise, he was solid, helping the Cubs earn a split of the 2-game interleague series. The Tigers now begin a 3-game home series tomorrow against the Cleveland Indians. Detroit Lions announced today that they've signed first-round pick Lincoln Tomlinson, leaving just 7 first-round picks without deals. Detroit has its entire draft class under contract. The 6'3", 323-pound guard was brought in to help stabilize the interior of an up-and-down Lions front. It appears he'll battle with experienced veteran Manny Ramirez, not the baseball player, for the starting job at left guard during training camp. All right, the Chicago Blackhawks, they faced a 20-year-old goalie, making his first playoff start in the Stanley Cup Final and only beat him twice, but that was enough. Brandon Saad scored 6 minutes and 22 seconds into the third period, giving Chicago a 2-1 win against the Tampa Bay Lightning at the United Center on Wednesday, evening the best-of-7 series 2-2. A Tampa Bay rookie, Andre Vasilevsky, made 17 saves in place of injured Ben Bishop. The NBA announced on Wednesday that it has signed an apparel deal with Nike beginning with the 2017-18 season. Now, the deal is an 8-year partnership. Financial terms were not immediately disclosed, but the deal is worth roughly, get this, $1 billion, which is approximately a 245% annual increase from the previous deal. Unlike during the deals with Reebok and Adidas, Nike's logo will appear on NBA jerseys, a first for the league. the U.S. of A. They came from a goal down to beat the world champions Germany in a friendly match for Bobby Wood, struck from 20 yards with 3 minutes left from the visitors, who are managed by former Germany striker Jürgen Klinsmann. Now, it was USA's first win in Germany and their final fixture before Klinsmann names the 23-man squad for the Gold Cup in July, while Germany were preparing for their Euro 2016 qualifier with Gibraltar on Saturday. Bob Costas called ESPN's decision to award Caitlyn Jenner with the Arthur Ashe Courage Award a, quote, crass exploitation play. Now, the veteran broadcaster said that while he has no qualms over Jenner's transition from a man to a woman, he believes there are other more worthy candidates in the world of sports. He continued to say that ESPN's decision to award Jenner was merely to attract eyeballs. And last but not least, former Detroit Tiger Torrey Hunter was thrown out of Wednesday night's game, arguing a call, a third strike, actually late in the Minnesota Twins loss to the Kansas City Royals, and became animated and needed to be briefly restrained in the aftermath. He yanked off his elbow pad, shin guard, and batting gloves, threw them toward the batter's box after the ejection. For good measure, he even ripped off his jersey and tossed that over the first baseline. Gotta love Torrey Hunter, right? That wraps up your current sports quick hit headliners. If you want to call in right now and share your thoughts, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports or even tweet me at Al Martin, WKAR. Without further ado, it's about that time to start the show.
Shot.
Frank.
Sit down.
Frank.
Stand up.
Frank.
Pass out.
Frank.
Wake up.
Frank.
Fade it.
Frank.
Fade it.
Now I done grew around some people living their life in bottles. Granddaddy had the golden flask, backstroke every day in Chicago. Some people like the way it feels, some people wanna kill their sorrow, some people wanna fit in with the popular. That was my problem, I was in the dark.
Welcome to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Man, right there, that is one of my favorite tracks from my favorite artist, Kendrick Lamar, Swimming Pools. One of his biggest tracks, actually one of the tracks that actually propelled Kendrick to the top of the hip hop game, at least in my opinion. And you know, it's funny when you listen to that track. You know, you heard it. You know, the drank. I mean, that's what everybody when they hear that song, they quote that song. You know, with the chorus, because it's so in your face. And a lot of people just think that it's a song about drinking, but no, the song is actually about Kendrick's grandfather. Who battled alcohol problems. He was an alcoholic growing up, and he just kind of recounts his time as a young tyke watching that. But I tell you what, alcohol, folks, it's something, you know, in the sporting world, to equate this to the sporting world, it's a topic of discussion that has really came to a headway, more so specifically when talking about sporting events. Now, I don't know if you guys heard this, but interesting news concerning the University of Maryland. Maryland actually wants to start selling beer at football games next season. Now, the school has actually approved a plan that will allow alcohol sales at all sporting events, though it won't include hard liquor or wine right away. Now, it still officially needs to pass county approval, but for the 2015-16 school year, a trial period, as the school is calling it, beer would be the only beverage available, and people can buy one at a time. Now, if the sales are deemed successful, then wine will be added starting in 2016, and people can buy two drinks at a time. Oh, boy, interesting stuff. Now, according to the Baltimore Sun, campus reaction to the possibility of alcohol sales was pretty mixed. You know, there were some students that favored the proposal, others weren't, including the directors of state-funded college alcohol committee. The county is also not exactly fond of the idea either. However, it will have a full hearing later in the summer and could be still approved. Now, this is actually coming from Charles W. Caldwell III, who is the chairman of the county's Board of License Commissioners. He said, Quote, we told them we didn't think it was a good idea. I don't think they paid any attention to us, though. The university said it would not have alcohol sales located near the student section at Bird Stadium. Sales will be cut off before the fourth quarter. Interesting stuff. You know, we had this debate before here on the show when Mark Hollis actually, who is Michigan State's athletic director, Mark actually addressed the possibility of alcohol sales at Spartan Stadium. And Mark has gone on the record multiple times to say that he's not interested or fond of the idea because, you know, if you look at a college campus, folks, we all know if you've been to a Spartan football game on a Saturday, I mean, tailgating is the thing. You know, I did it when I was in college. I mean, you know, you get a few drinks before the game, you go in and enjoy the game. And you're pretty much feeling very good before you even hit the doors of Spartan Stadium because you tailgated, what, 2 or 3 hours before the action even started, before kickoff. So if you look at college sports, when you compare it to other realms of sporting events, you know, that of the pros, there's a little tailgating that goes on when you talk about the NFL. But usually in the NFL season, for the most part, as it goes on and protrudes into December, January, and February, the weather isn't ideal for tailgating, folks. You start to see it on college campuses. I mean, it happens right, you know, usually season starts at the end of August, then goes on and goes on until about, you know, until December. I mean, during that time, I mean, sure, you have your days where it's just blistering cold out there. But colleges have such a storied and traditional history of drinking and tailgating before the game that it's so ingrained in the sport. And ideally, the weather is ideal. I guess you could say the weather is more ideal than another sporting realm, such as the NFL. You know, you don't see it happen at college basketball games. Not at all, really, because, you know, it's blistering cold by the time a college basketball season revs up. You don't really see it at all when it comes to that realm of college sporting events. You don't see it in the NBA. College football is where you see tailgating happen the most. And again, you know, it amazes me as I walk through campus now as a reporter, man, and go cover Michigan State football games, and I'm walking, you know, to the stadium, and it amazes me just how many people are already just off their rocker, already drunk before they even hit the door. I mean, it gets bad, especially when we talk about the students. So to already add fuel to that fire, I don't know. I kind of have mixed feelings about it. Now, from an economical standpoint, yeah, if you approve beer or liquor sales at a sporting event, you better believe economically, yeah, it could be profitable for you, without a doubt. So I see why Maryland is trying this whole thing out. But you have to be really careful, really, really careful, because there is a fine line. You got to be really careful when you talk about the safety of the individuals out there who attend these games. There are kids at these games. A lot of kids. And you got, for me, if you're going to do this, security has to be one of the number one conversations that you have if you're going to enact beer and liquor sales at a stadium. Now, again, this is just a trial period. So right now, we're just talking about beer being approved at the University of Maryland. And, you know, and again, I'm curious to get your thoughts because there are those that feel like me. I kind of had mixed reactions about it because if you're trying to increase dollar sales at your respective sporting venue, this is smart. This is going to drive in more dollars for you. How much more dollars? That's the big question. I mean, how big of a difference will this really make economically to the point where you say, okay, we're thinking about making this a permanent thing? If it spikes your dollar sales, you know, by like 1 or 2%, you know, up to 5%, I don't know. I don't know if it's worth it. But if you see a significant increase into the pockets of the university, if you enact this, then yeah, why not make it a staple? You just have to be, you got to be careful because you got to make sure there are a lot of people attending these games. There are kids out there attending these games. You already have a raucous crowd because of the culture that is college football, at least. Now, again, this is actually being approved at all sporting events. But the big worry for me is college football because we all know what goes down 3 hours before the game. People get out there early. The drinking happens immediately. And if you increase liquor sales or beer sales by approving that within the venue of where the game is actually taking place, Could that spike up rowdiness in the crowd? Violence in the crowd? Who knows? What do you think about it? 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. And I don't know. I think across the board, if this becomes a thing where where certain universities, different universities out there, now you have a team in the Big Ten, a school in the Big Ten, I should say, approving this. I don't know if Mark looks at the numbers and if Maryland, issues a report and says, you know, look here, I mean, this drove our sales up tremendously and really put a lot more dollars in our pockets. I don't know. Could you see Spartan Stadium doing something like that? It's going to be very interesting to see how this whole thing pans out. And if it proves successful, you better believe that many other universities across the nation will be hopping on this train. 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Folks, as the show continues, we've got a hot one for you. Of course, it is Thursday. And I love Thursday because, it kind of educates me, as being a reporter and being a fan of sports, of course, doing this job. And many of you out there, that's why you tune in. You are a fan of sports and want to know the latest news and latest hot button topics. Going back in time, it really enlightens me each and every Thursday here on the show because we like to go back in time and look at what exactly happened on this day in the sporting world. And it was a pretty busy day if looking at just my template here for Throwback Thursday. A pretty busy day in the sporting realm. A lot happened today. A lot happened. But I feel like, I broadened my horizons and broadened my education on the sporting world each and every Thursday because we hop in that current sports time machine and take a look at the past. And a few interesting things happened on this Throwback Thursday that we'll get to in just a sec. Also, folks, man, I had a great time. A great time yesterday after Current Sports Radio. Of course, we had our weekly taping of Current Sports TV, which we have moved the time up from 6 p.m. to 3 p.m. now for the spring and summer months. And I invited Mike Ingram, who is the head men's basketball coach for Lansing Community College. He's actually just completed his 25th year at the helm as the head coach of that remarkable program. He was named as the Western Conference's Coach of the Year when it comes to, of course, community college men's basketball. He's won that award actually now 17 times. Can you believe that? 17-time Coach of the Year. Absolutely unbelievable stuff. So it was my first time actually getting to meet Mike in person. We sat down, had an unbelievable chat. Again, you can catch Current Sports TV, of course, on your televisions, tonight at 10 p.m. on WKAR-TV. But we love to give you guys a sneak peek, those who tune into Current Sports Radio week in and week out. We love to give you guys a sneak peek right here on the radio show. So you'll get to hear that on the back end of the hour. But moving along here, folks, I want to bring this up because, again, if you just now tune into Current Sports, you may have not have heard this story in our Quick Hit Headliners. Interesting take on ESPN's ESPYs ceremony that happens each and every year. The ESPYs are one of the events that I really look forward to. I don't watch a lot of award shows, maybe like the Grammys, because I'm a big, music head. So I love to see who takes home the different Grammy awards. I sometimes watch the Oscars if I'm not doing nothing that night. But if there's another sporting event on during the time of the Oscars, I'm not watching. So I don't really watch a lot of award shows. But when the ESPYs comes on, I am completely glued to my TV because it is really the only sports award show, mainstream show that's really out there, that's broadcasted nationally. The ESPN does a great job, in my opinion, putting on the ESPYs, and they always, bring an interesting dynamic to it and have an interesting host. I remember last year, I believe they had Drake host the entire show. He was absolutely hilarious. I'm not sure who the host is going to be this summer, but it's always a fantastic time just to sit down and see just the amount of athletic talent and just legends in the sporting world all under one roof. Always fun stuff. But Bob Costas, a guy who I admire in the business, a guy who I've been watching do broadcast sports for quite some time, ever since I was in diapers, okay? Who I admire tremendously. Bob Costas has actually weighed in on the ESPYs. And, you guys know that ESPN, they love to honor certain individuals through perseverance, those who have persevered and gone through, a certain trial or tribulation in the world of sports. They honor them with the Arthur Ashe Courage Award and multiple other awards also. But I don't know if you guys saw, but, you know, the ESPYs announced, and ESPN announced that they will be awarding the Arthur Ashe Courage Award to Caitlyn Jenner. Yeah, you guys know, formerly known as Bruce Jenner, the famed Olympian who won back in the day, back in the 80s, in the decathlon, excuse me. So Bob Costas actually was on the Dan Patrick show. And, you know, he was on the show, and Dan brought up the ESPYs and ESPN's acknowledgement of Caitlyn Jenner coming out and transforming himself from a man to a woman. So Bob Costas called ESPN's decision to award Caitlyn Jenner with the Arthur Ashe Courage Award a, quote, crass exploitation play. Now, the veteran broadcaster said that he has no qualms over Jenner's transition from a man to a woman, but he believes that there are more worthy candidates in the world of sports, saying, quote, in the broad world of sports, I'm pretty sure they could have found someone. And this is not anything against Caitlyn Jenner, who was much closer, actively involved in sports, who would have been deserving of that award and what it represents. He continued to say that ESPN's decision to award Jenner was merely to attract eyeballs. Here's a direct quote from him again. Quote, I think this is just a play to pump up the audience. The way lots of things are put on television to attract eyeballs, not because of the validity, but because of whatever the kind of gawker factor is. Now, he did go on to say that he did find Jenner's story courageous, so he's kind of riding the fence here, going on to say, quote, that's not to say that it doesn't take some measure of personal courage to do what Caitlyn Jenner has done. I wish Caitlyn Jenner well, and anyone, even if most of us do not fully understand it, anyone seeking to find the identity they're comfortable with and to live with the happiest possible life without intentionally hurting anyone else, I think we're moving toward a more tolerant society. And that's all for the good. And I wish Caitlyn all the happiness in the world and all the peace of mind in the world. I gotta tell you, folks, first off, Bob Costas ruffled a lot of feathers with this because the national reaction to the story of Bruce Jenner transforming into Caitlyn Jenner has been pretty positive. Overall, you know, I've been on my Instagram. Now, there have been a few people out there I've seen on my Instagram as well, and my Twitter page and Facebook page, just social media in general. People out there also bashing, if you will, Caitlyn Jenner and the attention that she has been getting for this. But there have also been those that have supported Bruce's transition into Caitlyn Jenner and find it very courageous. I actually got a chance to sit down and watch the entire interview that Bruce Jenner at the time. I'm so confused as to what to call it. Should I say he, she? It's confusing stuff. But at the time, Bruce Jenner sat down with Diane Sawyer on ABC. I got a chance to watch the entire 2-hour special that really was very in depth. And, you know, Bruce talked about how he struggled with this for so long. He talked about his time in the Olympics and so on and so forth. And finally, how he feels free, that he has found his identity and is finally making this transition. So it mixed reactions across the board. From my perspective, mostly positive. But the fact that ESPN decided to award Caitlyn Jenner with the Arthur Ashe Courage Award after Bruce or Caitlyn had this big, this 2-hour special, and after, you know, just the hype machine has been turned to 1,000 on this story. I mean, you can't turn on your television without seeing some story relating to Caitlyn Jenner. I just thought, I have to agree 100% with Bob Costas. And we live in a society, especially when you talk about from a media perspective, folks, it's all about ratings. It's all about getting eyeballs to watch your respective program. At the end of the day, when ESPN has the ESPYs and they sit down in that postscript meeting and they look at the ratings to see if this event was a success, because that's how they measure it. How many people watch the ESPYs? Did we do our job? you better believe a hot button story, such as Caitlyn Jenner being awarded the Arthur Ashe Courage Award, you better believe that is going to attract everyone. My grandmother, who could care less about sports, when she found out about this, she made it a point to have me DVR, set up her DVR to watch the ESPYs, an award show that she didn't even previously know existed. So people who don't even care about sports are going to tune in to the ESPYs to see this take place. Is it smart? Yeah. ESPN, this is genius from a marketing standpoint. But I see exactly where Bob Costas is going here because, yeah, they probably could have found someone else who has battled through much more adversity or that of equal adversity of a Caitlyn Jenner, because I do think it is courageous. It is courageous when you have so many individuals out there, many people who don't agree with changing your identity or changing your gender based on your comfortability with life. There are many people who don't agree with it. You know, people have different religious backgrounds and different beliefs culturally that they just don't agree with it. So Caitlyn, and Bruce certainly took a lot of flack on that end as well. Because I do think there's a lot of negative reaction to this story just as much as positive reaction as well. So it does take a lot of courage to go against the grain, go against the norm of society to do something that you feel needs to be done for your overall mental perspective on who you are. I agree. It takes a lot of courage, especially when you get a lot of backlash for it. But I just think at the end of the day, ESPN is just going with the hype machine, looking at this and saying, we could get a lot of views off of this. Let's award the Arthur Ashe Award to Caitlyn Jenner. I don't know. I agree. I have to agree with Bob 110%. Do you disagree with us? 517-355-9527-515-9527. Again, we're taking your calls all the way up until 2 p.m. Let's hit our first break. When we come back, folks, we will have Throwback Thursday for you. Just exactly what took place on this day in the world of sports. Don't touch that dial. You are listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, right here on WKAR AM 870.
Hi, I'm Armin Alney. On the next To the Point, student debt now totals more than $1 trillion with an average burden of $35,000. So much that some commentators are advocating default. Institutions of higher learning are blamed for raising tuition to what parental traffic will bear. Debt-free college is becoming a campaign issue for both political parties. Next time on To the Point from Public Radio International.
To the Point today at 2 on AM 870 WKAR.
Words everywhere, but not a book in sight.
It's really about developing a love for reading, a passion for the written word, finding that spark in a child, and making sure that they're a reader for life.
Opportunities to read are everywhere, but is long-form lit a turnoff to kids? Taking a summer book vacation with LeVar Burton. Next time on The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI, Public Radio International.
The Takeaway, today at 3 on AM 870 WKAR.
Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Looking here on our Instagram page, we do have a few comments concerning what we have talked about at the top of the hour. Let's see here. This is from Martin Weiss, 22, talking about the University of Maryland approving a plan to sell beer at sporting events. Martin says, the University of Maryland? I thought that it had to be sanctioned through the Big Ten. Now, that was also my initial reaction, Martin, when I saw this story. I thought that the Big Ten Conference itself had had to have some involvement with this decision. But I'm looking here. This article is coming directly from yahoosports.com. And it says, you know, I'm seeing nothing in relation to the Big Ten Conference throughout the article. And the school itself has approved that plan that will allow alcohol sales at sporting events, specifically beer. And again, they're calling it a trial period. Again, beer would be the only beverage available, and people can buy one at a time. And again, you know, if they see that the sales are successful, then wine could possibly be added in 2016, and people can buy two drinks at a time. So, again, you know, this still has to go through, and it still needs county approval. So we will certainly keep you and all of our listeners out there posted as this story moves along in the coming weeks. Also, you know, when looking at other universities and how this will affect other universities and are other universities doing this, actually, I'm looking here in the article, the University of Texas may add alcohol sales to football games soon after the school's new president endorsed the idea. Alcohol is available at other sporting events. Minnesota added beer sales in 2012 at the new TCF Bank Stadium, and they actually lost money in the first year. Can you believe that? So, you know, hey, there's no guarantee that if you, you know, enact beer sales at a sporting event, there's no guarantee that this will spike up sales for the upcoming year. This could go completely haywire. I mean, again, Minnesota, they added beer in 2012 and actually lost money in their first year. So, hey, we'll see how this how this goes along. But at the end of the day, I mean, hey, if you're trying to, you know, spark up more money in your university at sporting events, hey, why not try it? Why not try it? So we'll keep you abreast to this story in the coming days and weeks. Also, we have one reaction right now concerning the whole situation with Caitlyn Jenner being honored with the Arthur Ashe Award at the ESPYs. This comes from CastorTroy06. He says, "Why should he/she receive the award? That's absolutely ludicrous." So that's one reaction right there. Again, folks, our phone lines are open 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. In the meantime, it is time for Throwback Thursday, where we take a look at what exactly happened on this particular Thursday in sports.
Wing, there's a drive to left. That one is long. Eisenman back over his step. Into the slot for Brown. She's yes. Gone. And there it goes. You never know when to expect it. Darren McCarty said before.
All right, folks, it is time for Throwback Thursday. You heard the montage where we take a look at what happened on this particular Thursday in sports history. All right, well, let's rewind the clock all the way back to actually 1938. Wow. Johnny Vandermeer of the Cincinnati Reds threw the first of two consecutive no-hitters. Are you kidding me? I mean, you have to be absolutely back-to-back no-hitters? That's unbelievable. You don't hear about that anymore. I mean, I've actually, a few days ago, I was remiss that we didn't mention this on current sports, but Chris Heston threw a no-hitter against the Mets, the Giants' right-handed pitcher. So shout out to Chris Heston, man. Anytime you throw a no-hitter, I mean, it's one of the more notable accomplishments in all of sports because of just how difficult it is. But Johnny Vandermeer of the Cincinnati Reds back in 1938 threw the first of two consecutive no-hitters. That's absolutely unbelievable. I wonder who he was playing against. All right, 1950, Ben Hogan returned to tournament play after a near-fatal car accident. He went on to win the U.S. Open. How about that? Ben Hogan, talk about resiliency, huh? That took place in 1950. In 1972, Hank Aaron, the great Hank Aaron, in my opinion, the greatest home run hitter we've ever seen. He actually tied the National League record for 14 Grand Slam homers in a career. That's fantastic stuff. Hank Aaron, one of the best to ever do it, folks. And did it the legal way. No steroids there, all right? 1974, the Kansas City Scouts and Washington Capitals officially received their NHL franchises. Now, the Scouts, of course, moved to Denver before the start of the 1976-77 season to become the Colorado Rockies and later the New Jersey Devils. So on this day back in 1974, ideally the birth of the New Jersey Devils. All right, 1988, Rick Rowden of the New York Yankees became the first pitcher to start as a designated hitter. In 1990, a pretty cool moment for one of the greatest to ever do it, Mr. Nolan Ryan.
Anticipation from the crowd of 35,000. 1,000 plus here in Oakland. Nolan Ryan, a 2-0 pitch. Fly ball, right field. Rivera in foul territory. Number 6 for Nolan Ryan. The Express has done it once again.
Yeah, that took place back in 1990, folks. Nolan Ryan, oh my goodness, at the age of 44, became the oldest player to throw a no-hitter. It was the 6th of his career. Fantastic stuff. Nolan Ryan, man, I really wish I actually got a chance to see Nolan play. I mean, of course, I was born in 1990, so I really get a chance to see many of the greats play in their prime, Nolan Ryan being one of those individuals. I really wish I actually had a current sports time machine to go back at the age of 24 to watch Nolan Ryan pitch, one of the best to ever do it. So again, 1990, Nolan Ryan becoming the oldest player at the age of 44 to throw a no-hitter, the 6th of his career. In 1995, Mark McGwire tied a major league record when he hit home runs in 5 consecutive games. Are you kidding me? Now, of course, it was found that Mark McGwire was on steroids, so he was juicing it up. But how about that? You guys know, speaking of 90s baseball, you remember that whole race to who would have the most home runs between Sammy Sosa and Mark McGwire in that one season? I mean, my goodness, how big was that, right? Again, I do stand by what I say when I think that, you know, guys like Mark McGwire, I do think that, and Barry Bonds as well, I do think those individuals should be let into the Hall of Fame based on the fandom that alone those individuals created. I mean, they brought eyeballs alone to the game of baseball and created a phenomenon that we hadn't previously seen for quite some time before those guys. Baseball owes it to them to put them in the Hall of Fame. Just put an asterisk next to their name. You got to just throw up an asterisk. He did juice. He did use steroids. But I do believe these individuals do deserve a place somewhere in baseball's most coveted shrine in the Hall of Fame. All right, 1995, Lee Smith set a major league record when he got his 16th consecutive save in 16 appearances. In 2010, ESPN launched ESPN 3D. I'm not sure exactly what I think 3D is when you can watch, you know, when you can stream live games. If you don't happen to have ESPN, all the ESPN channels at home, you can stream games that you may normally not get online. So shout out to ESPN 3D. You have enhanced many, many sports fans' lives out there, okay? In 2010, the FIFA World Cup opened in South Africa. It was the first time it was held in Africa. And last but certainly not least, in 2012, this happened.
Ladies and gentlemen, today he has won his 7th French Open title, Rafael Nadal.
You never imagined Borg 6 would ever be beaten, but he's done it. And he is still the man to beat at Roland Garros. And still just 26 years old, he could put the record beyond anybody's reach by the time this phenomenal man's career has come to an end.
How about that? Impressive stuff, folks. On this day in 2012, Rafael Nadal won his record 7th French Open title when he defeated Novak Djokovic. Rafael Nadal, at the time, he was, 26 years old, as you heard in the montage there. He is now 29 years old and still one of the best tennis players to ever do it. Many consider him, you know, there are a few people out there, that tennis fanatics, that consider Rafael Nadal to be the best. So, impressive stuff, folks. Well, that wraps up Throwback Thursday here on Current Sports, where we take a look at what happened on this particular Thursday in sports history. Hey, did I miss anything? Call in 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Let's hit our second break. When we come back, we will give you a sneak peek into tonight's Current Sports TV sit-down with the head coach of the Lansing Community College men's basketball team, Mike Ingram. Don't touch that dial. You are listening to Current Sports right here on WKAR AM 870.
from the moment you wake up through the chaos of your busy morning, Morning Edition is there with you.
Good morning. I'm Steve Inskeep. Protesters have been
through
marching.
All you have to do, we'll bring you all you need to know every weekday on Morning Edition from NPR News.
Listen every morning on the way to work between 5 and 9 on 90.5 WKAR.
The BBC World Service.
You're listening to the newsroom.
This is Clip.
Welcome to Assignment.
Welcome to From Our Own Correspondent.
Hello and welcome to Global Business.
Welcome to Hard Talk.
Welcome to The Y Factor.
This is Science and Action.
Welcome to More or Less.
Welcome to Outlook.
It's time for Witness.
Hello and welcome along to The Arts Hour.
Great to have you on World Have Your Say.
Welcome to Sport Today.
BBC News.
The World Service from the BBC.
The BBC on AM 870 WKAR.
Welcome back, ladies and gents. Welcome back to Current Sports. We also have one more before we get to our sneak peek into tonight's Current Sports TV sit down. As you guys get a sneak peek, as we do each and every Thursday afternoon here on the show. Again, you know, the hot button topic of today here on the show is the University of Maryland approving a plan to sell beer at sporting events, and we've asked you all to weigh in on this. We have another comment here from Tony Briscoe, who says that's a complete game changer. So he is in favor of it. Again, you can call in 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527, as we have just under now 20 minutes left in the show. Well, folks, Mike Ingram, he's a graduate of Lansing Community College and Central Michigan University. Mike was an All-American player at LCC, played 2 years at Central Michigan University, and played high school basketball with the very first African-American coach to ever win a Super Bowl, of course, with the Indianapolis Colts. That was Tony Dungy. Played high school basketball with him. That's impressive stuff. Now, he has also been a part of the men's basketball coaching staff at Lansing Community College since 1988, and continues to head an impressive 500-205 record. He served as the assistant coach in 1988 when the men's team won the NJCAA National Championship, and has coached his team to fourth place and sixth place national NJCAA finishes, and led his team to 17 MCAA championships overall. I can go on and on about the man's resume on the hardwood. He was also named as the Michigan Community College Athletic Association Western Conference Coach of the Year this season. He's done it. He's done that, folks, and done that honor now 17 times. I got a chance to chat with Mike Ingram, head coach of the Lansing Community College men's basketball team, for this week's Current Sports TV episode, which can be seen tonight at 10 p.m. on WKAR-TV. But as you know, we are giving you guys an exclusive sneak peek preview of that sit-down right now. And I had to start by asking Mike just what goes through his head when he thinks about being a 17-time Michigan Community College Athletic Association Western Conference Coach of the Year.
This one was a little different this year because this year was the first time that the coaches voted on it. Usually if you won the conference championship, you automatically got it. But this year I was voted on it. So, that felt pretty good because, you know, we were struggling, and I think everybody recognized where we were at and where we ended up at. And so a couple coaches seen me before it happened and said, you know, we voted for you, Coach of the Year. So this one's a little more special, I think, than the other ones.
So in the previous years, it wasn't voted upon. How did that process go then?
Well, you won the conference. You were Coach of the Year. And there's a couple other Coaches of the Year also because we won the district. I was the district coach of the year, and then also they have the BCAM, which is the Basketball Coaches of Michigan. I was voted for the coach of the year for that one this year also, and it's been probably 10 or 12 years. So it's been a good year for being coach of the year awards.
Fantastic stuff and well-deserved honor. Mm-hmm. Now, Mike, I want to talk about your outstanding family who have pretty impressive basketball backgrounds.
Right.
You got Mike, Elena, Justin, and Jocelyn.
Right. Yeah.
They all have a background in basketball. How cool is that? How did you introduce them to the game, and how did they take a liking to it?
Well, I think that, you know, because I was a coach and they were always in the gym with me, I think they liked me, and so they liked hanging out with me, and they just kind of gravitated towards it. They were always, you know, in the gym, and, you know, one was older, and then the next one would come, and then the next one would come, and, you know, then they all had goals. My son Mike played for me, played 2 years for me, and then he wanted to referee, and so that's what he's doing now. And then Elaine, just she always wanted to be a player, and she ended up going to Michigan, and then Justin went to Toledo, and then Jocelyn went to a Lamar down in Texas. But one of the reasons she went there because they were a Division I school, and she wanted to be Division I like everybody else, but she ended up at Grand Valley. So they, you know, they all like it. But the team that they love the most is LCC, and if you ever see them around, that's the gear that they wear all the time. So they actually really love our basketball program.
Now, going back to Justin, right? He's playing overseas right now. Yeah. 30 years old, went to Toledo. Mm-hmm. I mean, how has his career gone over there? And what's that been like as a father of a player who's playing millions and millions of miles away from where you are right now?
Well, it's been great because we've had me and my wife have had an opportunity to see some things. We've been to Paris because he's played over in France. He's played last year over in Greece. She goes a little more than I do. She goes every year. I go every now and then. But
it's Paris?
No. Wherever he's at, to go see him play. She goes every year. Yeah,
that's a nice trip, right?
Yeah, it is a nice trip. I just go every now and then. The flight is a little long for me, but he loves it. You know, he had a great career at Toledo. They put him in the Hall of Fame there a couple years ago. He runs a great camp here in town that fills up every year. You know, as a matter of fact, I seen the other day they had on their flyer the best skills and best drills of any camp anywhere, and I'm going like this, didn't you get those skills and drills from me? You
know, like, hold on, right, now pump right, your right, brakes, right, brother. Right. Come on, son.
but they do a great. Elaine runs it. Jocelyn comes back. The whole family is there, and so it's a great camp. So he's doing really well. He's getting married this year.
Oh,
so.
Congratulations, Justin. That's big stuff, man.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Now you. Let's talk about your playing career and how you fell in love with the game of basketball. Now you were an All-American at Lansing Community College. You played 2 years at Central Michigan University. I mean, how did you come to like the game of basketball? How were you introduced to it, Mike?
Well, you know, we grew up, you know, as older guys, we grew up where there wasn't a lot of stuff to do in the house. And if you stayed at home, you had to work, you know, you had to cut grass, you know, wash windows. And so we just played everything, you know, baseball, basketball, football. And I just kind of fell into basketball as being the sport that I liked. And, you know, I was pretty good at it. I was older when I came, you know, back to school. So I just feel like, you know, I was very fortunate to be able to, you know, have a skill and be able to come. I just wanted to come to Lansing and use the basketball to get a job. You know what I mean? Next thing you know, I ended up getting a scholarship up to Central. And Art Frank, who brought me here, was very instrumental in me going there. And he was very instrumental to bringing me back as an assistant coach. And I think from day one, he told me that I was going to be a coach one day. And I told him, I said, no, I'm not. You know, I just don't like the bus rides. I don't like to travel. But he just said I was really a natural at it. And so when he brought me back, he groomed me to be the head coach here.
So when having that conversation, when you said, no, I'm never going to be a coach.
Right.
How did you buy into that mentality of saying, okay, let me try it out?
Well, you know what? I think that I think all players go through the thing of, you know, the long bus rides and you know, that can really get to you sometimes, especially if you play 4 years in college. But, you know, it was a job. LCC has always been a great spot for me. I just kind of fell into the coaching. I was working somewhere else, but I was a part-timer, and then just became a full-time job, and it's probably the best job. Well, I know it's the best job I've ever had, and I still enjoy it just as much as I did when I first took it. I remember when I got the job, my wife says to me, she says, boy, I know you are so happy. Now you can just go in and work and laugh and tell jokes all day. I said, she was right.
It helps when you're doing something you love, right?
Yep, I really like it.
You always say, if you do something you love, you never work another day in your life. That's right, why I love right. being here on Current Sports, right, all right, right, folks? Now, pretty interesting stuff. You played high school basketball with the first African-American coach to ever win a Super Bowl. It was pretty cool because, Mike, you know, going back in my memory bank, I remember when I was an intern back in the day for Channel 6 News up here, and I actually got a chance to cover the Michigan Sports Hall of Fame induction ceremony. Right. Tony was being inducted. Oh, what year was that? Like 2012, I believe.
Right.
You got a chance to play high school basketball with him. I mean, what was that experience like?
Well, you know, there was a couple guys that always said that Tony was going to, you know, be a pro. You know, he was a pro in everything. He was good in football. He was good in basketball. He was good in baseball. He was good in everything that he did. I think the only thing that really surprises me now is he just seemed to be so much bigger than us when he played, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he's really just a little guy, you know what I mean?
Right.
He was very smart. Well, not smart, I would say intelligent. He was an intelligent athlete, and so that made him a lot better than everybody else. He knew what he was doing at all times. He's a great guy. He's still a great guy. I was at a clinic one time, and he happened to be speaking, and he said, I see Mike Ingram sitting there, so that was a great moment for me.
You know? So you guys are pretty close then?
We're close because we went to school together. I think if I was to see him that, of course, you know, we're home. You know, home is home in Jackson, a small town and stuff. But I haven't been to any games or anything like that in a long time. But there was a time when if we wanted to go, all we had to do was reach out and he'd come through for us. I think he still comes through for King Center. You know, he gives them tickets and stuff whenever they want to go someplace. So, you know, Tony was, you know, hey. He was a superior athlete, no doubt about it.
And always, at any time you hear someone who knows Tony, they always talk about how great of a guy he is.
Yeah.
Great stuff.
Yeah.
Now, Mike, you have been the head coach at Lansing Community College now for, as you told me in the green room, 25 years now.
Right.
What has kept you here?
It's just a great job. You know, I enjoy what I do. At one time, it was a situation where it's a job where I could do what I wanted to do as far as with my family. You know, okay, if one of my kids was doing something, I could always make it. It gave them access to college. I think that helped them once they got to college. They had been on a college campus their whole life, and so I think it was an easy transition for them. I like the kids in the city. I like the coaches. I've been successful. I had a plan when I came in was to make sure that LCC was for the kids from Lansing, and that's what I wanted to do, you know. And I didn't know I'd be here this long. I remember when I won my 300th game, I said, well, I won't be here for four, and now I'm on my way to six, I think. And so,
right.
You know, but it's a great job. It's a great school. I remember what it did for me as a student, and so I try to make sure that it's going to do the same thing for the kids that I bring in.
Now, what you hear about, a lot of ball players who come to a community college to play ball, I mean, a lot of these players have a goal of playing, you know, 1 or 2 years at the community college level and then possibly transferring to maybe a Division I university, like a Michigan State, for example. What is more gratifying for you when you talk about player development or the job overall? Seeing kids transfer to play Division I ball or winning championships?
You know what? It's not always about Division I, and that's the one thing that you have to tell kids when they come in. I think the most important thing for me is to see them transfer on somewhere, you know, to continue their education. You really have to be a special player, a special student to go Division I. It's really tough. I mean, you got all these schools in Michigan, you got all these schools all over the country, so. I think the last person we had was Nate Duhan, and he was special. And so he was a special student. He was a special basketball player. But the goal is always to, you know, make sure that guys move on. You want them to move on and continue their education. And that's from the top guy to the guy that's sitting on the end of the bench. You want to give them an opportunity to go someplace. Hey, championships are good too.
You can't knock them, right?
Yeah, I like that too. But because what you do is you try to tell the guys that when they go in for a job interview and stuff, if they say, hey, I played on a couple championship teams, that's letting a team know, a job know that, hey, I'm bringing in a championship guy who knows how to work hard, who knows how to give everything that he has to be a part of something. And so I think that it helps him. So, it's not always about Division I, because Division I is really tough, but it is about moving on if you can.
Mike, how much movement actually occurs mm-hmm. throughout a year on a community college roster such as yours?
And last year was a great year for us. We did some things academically with some advisors and really got our guys through. I think it's been up and down. Some years you lose some guys, some years you don't, because the rules, the guys don't understand the rules. But it's touch and go. But I think that over the years, I think we lost a kid about 4 years ago that was a great player for us. It really hit us really hard that we lost him. And I think since that time, we always try to push academics on those guys. But since that time, I've called mm-hmm. in for more help, from the athletic department, more help from the advisors, more help from the tutors, more help from the school to see if we can get these guys through. College is not high school. And guys have to recognize that, sometimes a high school teacher might like you and just might pass you through. I'm not saying it happens that they could, but, in college you got to do the work. And if you don't do the work, you won't make it. And so we needed more help, and so we've done that. And so I think the last couple of years we've really done well with that.
Now, I hear you hit on academics a lot throughout mm-hmm. this conversation.
Right.
Do you think that the student component mm-hmm. to the student athlete has taken a back seat? If so, how?
No, I just think that guys have to recognize that when they come in that they do have to be a student athlete, and that we have to put the stuff out there for them to be, successful. And it's really tough because, in college, you're on your own a lot more, and as a student. And so you have to be able to use your time the right way. As a lot of times, guys haven't really had that success that they're going to have when they come to LCC. All of a sudden you come and all of a sudden, whoa, I'm a star. I'm doing some things I haven't done before. And guys have to learn how to handle that. And the way to handle that is to keep going to class, keep doing the same things that got you there. And sometimes kids don't know how to do that. And that's everywhere.
So what have you seen happen with it through your experience? You've seen kids kind of get the big head and say, I'm a star. I don't need to go to class.
No doubt about it. No doubt about it.
How often does that occur?
It happens, but I know it's going to happen. So what you try to do is you just try to say, hey, I need you to stay in there. I need you to keep doing what you did to get here. That's why it's working. That's why it's working. And and that's for every kid. You just have to try and make sure that they're doing what they're supposed to do in the classroom. And like I said, we've gotten a lot of help in the last couple of years because we realized that we need it.
Gotta love that. Again, Mike Ingram, the head coach of the Lansing Community College men's basketball team. That was your sneak peek into tonight's taping, which you can catch on your televisions tonight at 10 o'clock on WKAR-TV. Now, what you didn't hear was the 12-man portion, where, of course, we go to our social media pages, or if you happen to have an audience in the house, we take questions from our live studio audience. We went social media this week, as many of you had questions for Mike. And there was one question in particular to close the show that got Coach Ingram in a bit of trouble. As the camera went off, he was like, Al, you definitely got me in trouble with that last question. Find out what that question was by tuning in to tonight's episode, okay? Of course, while current sports will be in session tonight, at the same time, yeah, you know what takes place. Game 4 of the NBA Finals. The Cleveland Cavaliers taking on the Golden State Warriors. Golden State trying to even up the series at 2 games apiece. I want to close today's show by, I'm remiss that I didn't talk about this moment the day after Game 3 right here on the show, because I found it to be one of the coolest moments I've ever seen in sports. And one of these individuals also agree. You guys know Jim Brown. A lot of people consider Jim Brown to be the greatest football player to ever play. He was a famed back for the Cleveland Browns. If you remember, before Game 3, LeBron James paid acknowledgement to Jim Brown, going over to Jim and bowing down to him. How cool was that? Jim Brown called it one of my favorite sports moments of all time. It was an honor for this young man to pay tribute to an old soldier. Well, that wraps up today's Current Sports. I want to give a special thanks again to Mike Ingram for joining me this week on Current Sports TV. Thanks so much to all of you out there for tuning in to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. As always, take care. Have one fantastic day. We're going to try to get Diamond Leung, beat reporter for the Golden State Warriors, on tomorrow's show. You do not want to miss that. Take care and be easy, people.